Good morning. My name is Lydia Miller, and I've been coming to Assembly for a year now. My first Sunday at Assembly was at the end of the summer worship series on a Sunday much like today. And I remember really being blown away by the vulnerability of the storyteller and the response of the congregation. It's something really special that you guys create here, this space, so thank you. My story this morning has some content that involves sexual assault and rape, and if that's something that you're sensitive to, feel free to take care of yourself and leave the room if that's necessary. A little overview of what I'm going to say. It's a transformation of my understanding of control in my life. That's my story. Namely, a transition from a time when control was being painfully taken away to a time when I could take back control, to a time right now in this moment where I'm thinking about what it might mean to let go of control. I didn't always feel as though my body was not my own. I think I was born in childhood, as many of us are, into this very unified and joyful sense of self. And like some lucky people, I was raised in a way that made me feel really fully good and loved deeply. And I think that's not everybody's experience, but that was my experience. And I just had a really wonderful, grounded childhood. And the fact that that changed, even with such a good foundation, is a testament to the power of some crazy forces in our world. Maybe we all start to experience a fragmentation at some point, a breaking down of that unified experience I was talking about, where we feel, instead of alive and connected in our bodies and loved, where we start to feel disconnected from our bodies or lost in our identities or judgmental of ourselves or floating, ungrounded. For me, that happened in high school. The pressures of an intense social order at school, along with an increasing experience of being objectified and sexualized in so many ways, it all got to me, and I started to have this deep sense that I wasn't good or okay. Because of those overwhelming forces of media and culture, and also the specifically hierarchical and objectifying way that my high school social group functioned, I came to this sense that my value or worth only came from my sexuality. But over and over again, all that brought me was more shame and feeling more worthless. At the point in my senior year when I was raped, at some level, it wasn't even surprising to me because it fit in with my understanding of self. I already understood that I wasn't inherently good and that my value was conditional on how I served or pleased others. That experience is such an utter loss of control. And it wasn't long before, amidst that trauma and the social pressures of my senior year, I fell into depression. And a number of things helped me recreate my sense of self-worth, including lots of love and presence from my parents, along with a combination, and therapy and medication. Shout out to therapy and medication. Over the next few years, through a combination of healing and some repressing, I came to a sense of having control over my life again. And I went to Goshen College. At Goshen College, I found myself in a room twice a week with the incredible Deb Detweiler, in what was then called the Women's World Music Choir. Deb honestly taught me a whole new way of being in my body. She never let us just be nice in the way that most people expect from a women's choir. She encouraged us to be fierce, surprising, powerful, ugly even. It was glorious. She helped us each place ourselves at the center of our own stories. So in my first few years at Goshen, I had a bit of a feminist awakening, as many do. And for the first time, I could place my experiences alongside the experiences of so many others in the context of a system of patriarchy and rape culture. I was able for the first time to see that this wasn't just me that this had happened to, that it was a pattern in society. In this time, I was able to also realize that my value was not conditional on serving others or their expectations of me. I was relearning that I could say no. I was relearning what I had known from childhood but forgotten, that I was valuable inherently, that I didn't have to prove or earn it. During this time, my first few years at Goshen College, I think that my Enneagram 8 personality was sort of calcified for me. For those of you that don't know the Enneagram, the type 8 is the challenger, the powerful, dominating type. I hadn't realized previously that I was an 8. Many 8s are mistyped. Many female 8s are mistyped. But I think that the energy I was feeling at that time helped me and others see that in me. The basic fear of an 8 is being harmed or controlled by others, and the basic desire is to protect themselves and to be in control of their own life and destiny. And I learned how to protect myself in college. And often that meant being kind of abrasive or intimidating. I was so afraid of having control taken away from me again from being hurt like that. So I developed this smart, fast wit and a sense of competition to make sure that I wasn't ignored or underestimated. I built up a suit of armor of strength through power. And this was important for me at the time. Looking back, I feel a lot of understanding and empathy for the way that I responded to protect myself during that time. And then I went on SST in Senegal, and I found my armor just breaking and falling apart around me. It broke apart when I fell in love with my host family, when I received with tears and wonder the kind of hospitality that transcends the zero-sum, self-interested economy that I was previously familiar with. My armor fell apart as I did dozens of interviews with Muslim women, young and old, about their understandings of their faith and gender in Islam. And I heard them describe a system where they had no control, and their inferiority to their husbands was commonplace, assumed, unchallenged. My armor fell apart as again and again in that place I was touched and pulled and yelled at and followed and stopped and grabbed in the streets by men I didn't know and men I did know. It took me right back to 3 years before, and I remembered what I had known then. Oh yeah, that's right. I don't have control over my body. My body is not my own. And so I came back from SST my junior year of college, and I was deeply depressed for a second time. Depression for me felt like a retracting inward. My life, which previously felt so extensive with cares and interests and connections outward in all directions, started fading around the edges, concentric circles shrinking until fewer and fewer things or people felt worth my time or energy. I took an incomplete on one of my classes. I dropped some other classes. The grades in my remaining classes started suffering. I dropped my minor. I stopped participating in the clubs I was a part of, including the one I had founded. I dropped friendships. Sometimes I didn't feel invested in what I had been building as my life anymore, but I kept going through the motions. It's very humbling in those dark moments to try to remember who you are and why you have value. When you're not functioning very well, all of those things that were previously identity touch points for you aren't there, and you need to figure out what's left. When everything was stripped away, what I found at the center, what was left for me, was me. And this time around, I was able to remember that I was good and loved and was worth putting the effort into making myself whole again. And so I went about doing it again. I did therapy and I did medication. Shout out to therapy and medication. There were so many hands of grace along the way, namely, again, my parents and good friends and wonderful just support from a lot of areas that helped me put myself back together. And I really think that I've been doing this work of putting myself back together for a while now. My fierce 8 justice protector self has been there protecting me. Really, for the past 3 years or so, I've been in this mindset of taking care of myself and working on behalf of myself and my well-being. And that is good. I am proud of myself. I have been working out what is healthy for me, working out how to deal with depression and PTSD symptoms when they come up. I found friendships that are so good and so valuable to me. I've invested in those relationships and relationships with my family. I worked on my financial stability. I found a job. I started paying off my loans. I figured out how much sleep I need to function best. You guys, I have a regular bedtime, and it's awesome. And for the most part, I made my decisions day to day based on whatever would be best for me and my health. Looking out for number one. And that's good. We need people in the world who know themselves and who are grounded and healthy. But is there something more? This is chapter 3 of my story, and I'm right on the edge of it, so I don't really know where this third chapter is going to go. But recently I've been more open to the idea of letting go. I'm not really sure where that came from. But it could be that I've built up enough stability and safety in my life that I don't feel like I have to fight for myself anymore. And having given up the fight, I've been more receptive to all the clues out there telling me that there is something more. These clues have been saying, maybe it's time to let go of some of this control that you've been working so hard to take back. There have been a lot of clues, actually, in retrospect. A book by Richard Rohr I was reading recently said, all good spirituality is basically about letting go. Okay. Also, really, most of Christianity would say the same thing, I think. Surrender is a major theme in the Bible, as I understand it. Most of the Enneagram wisdom for eights is about letting go. I was reading a book of Enneagram affirmations for each type, and I turned to the page for eights, and it said, I release the need to always feel I need to be in control of the environment. And then I read another setting, this advice for Enneagram 8s. Your spiritual path is about giving up the need to control everything. You learn that true strength comes not from domineering others, but surrendering to a higher power. So I was like, okay, I have to do this. And then there's Einstein. Who said that no problem can be solved by the same consciousness that created it. And I found that so interesting. No problem can be solved by the same consciousness that created it. Looking back, I have been trying to solve this problem of control in my life in a reactive way. So when power was taken away, I tried to grab it back in the same domination consciousness. It would take an entirely new consciousness to transcend that and do something else, maybe let go of control. So what does that mean? What does it mean? Actually, what does it mean? I didn't know, so I Googled it. I typed into Google, what does it mean to yield to God? And I clicked on the first Christian mom blogger that showed up, and I read with anticipation. There was this picture of a yellow yield sign at the top of the article, a traffic sign. And the article talked about how when we yield in traffic, we make room. We make space. We allow someone else to come in. Make room. I realized that I hadn't left any wiggle room in my life. I had been so focused on constructing my life and controlling all the parameters that I hadn't left any room. Constructing my life. If you know me, then you know that I love the phrase constructing my life. What power that gives me to be at the helm, constructing my life. What agency? What security? It's a strange thing to think about wanting to let that go. What would it mean for me to deconstruct my life? To look at all of the pieces that I had placed so carefully and let go of a little bit of my attachment. To look at those pieces and let them be more flexible or movable or optional, even. What would it mean to open up space for something that's not me to enter in and play a part in my life? One step as I consider these things that is really important to me is to have a good understanding of who this God is. If I'm going to open up space for God in my life, who is this God that I want to try to invite in? Because if I'm not careful, my mind can slip. And I can start to confuse God with the men that have abused me in my life. And maybe that's not a relatable thing for some of you, but I think in the context of patriarchy and domination, power is nearly always abused. And so when we talk about God as all-powerful, that's connected in my brain with powerful, abusive men. I wish it wasn't. And I'm working on it, but right now, that's just the connection that's there in my brain. The other day, I was listening to 89.9 BBN, that's Bible Broadcasting Network, because they play these unbelievably schmaltzy, cheesy versions of old hymns, and I get such a kick out of it. They're so good. 89.9 FM, 89.9, highly recommended. check it out. Usually when they have someone preaching on there, I change the channel. But this time I listened because the person speaking was talking about the potter and the clay, talking about the verse that we heard this morning. Now what this man said was unbelievable to me. I had to pull over and start jotting it down. So these are quotes. About the clay, so he starts out describing the characters in this, the clay and the potter. The clay, he says, that's us. The clay is formless, lifeless, inept, inert, incapable. And of the potter, about God, he says, he is all-powerful, incontestable, has the power to carry out his will, answerable to no one. He doesn't have to answer to anyone. He is an absolute dictator and a sovereign, and we live in the universe to please him. Wouldn't you know that sounded so familiar? It reminded me of that experience back when I was 17. Formless, lifeless, inert. He was all-powerful, had the power to carry out his will, didn't have to answer to anyone. I lived in a universe to please him. I know we don't talk about God here that way. We don't talk about God that way here. But since we live in the midst of a system of domination that upholds and celebrates and protects powerful and untouchable individuals who print wounds and scars onto our bodies, because of this, it's not so hard for our talk about yielding to God to become reminiscent of that trauma. The potter and the clay metaphor has felt sickening to me because of the way that my body has been taken and molded against my will. So it is critically, critically important to me to make a clear distinction here between an abusive God that is really just a projection of a corrupt humanity and a God of love, a God who is gentle and earnest and longs to be in relationship with us so that we can disrupt halls of power and turn the world upside down. A God whose voice sounds like butterfly sneezes. So you can tell I'm not all the way there yet. It's hard for me to sing some of the hymns that pair language of yielding and submission with male pronouns. It's hard for me to sing Spirit of the Living God sometimes, the part that goes, melt me, mold me, use me, fill me. That's hard for me sometimes. Shortly after coming to Assembly, I had some of these concerns, and I asked around about what channels there were for feedback, who I could talk to, and a week later, this email shows up inviting me to join worship committee. So I did. I love this. I love this about Assembly. At Assembly, if you have something to say, you'll have a voice, and you'll be on worship committee. In all honesty, I am so excited about deepening my faith here and being supported by this community as I take the next steps to learn what it could look like in my life to make space for God. I want to leave you with one more thought from Richard Rohr. He writes, "When one party has all the power, which is most people's very definition of God, all you can do is fear and try to control. The only way that this can be changed is for God, from God's side, to change the power equation and invite us into a world of mutuality and vulnerability. And the cool thing is, God does this. That is what makes God different. God changes the power equation and invites us into a world of mutuality and vulnerability. In that world, saying thanks to what has been and yes to what shall be, it starts to make sense. In that world, I can start to let go. In reflecting, I would like us to sing number 106 and sing the story, "Like a Tender Breath Stirring." This song uses the potter and the clay imagery, but in a way that's felt good to me, as a soft, whispering, tender invitation. So sing with me.